Welcome to the Big Pod Machine, episode one of season 2025. We're going to call it that.
Yeah.
We don't really have a season number because we, well, anyway. I'm Gordon Whitmire, the Inquirer beat writer for the Cincinnati Reds. And with me is my colleague and co-beat writer, Pat Brennan. Behind the scenes is Phil Didion, our esteemed producer. Who does a terrific job. We are going to bring you every week the Big Pod Machine, everything Reds every week, news and the hot topics of the week. We've got a few already, just a few games into the season. Yeah. Pat, welcome.
Gordon, it is truly, truly exciting to be here. I personally am honored to be chosen by you to breathe life into the Big Pod Machine.
Well, I thought
the best podcast name going, by the way, on this circuit.
It is very, it is very cool. But I'm going to give you credit for breathing life back into this because we discussed this in spring training and you actually were excited. Actually,
I was.
You sounded more excited then than you did just a minute ago.
You know, I'm playing
hurt. Which is why we're doing this.
I'm playing hurt right now because my voice is strained after a weekend in Philadelphia celebrating my youngest brother's wedding.
It ain't just your voice, pal.
Easy, down, boy. But
I heard some stories.
But that's what pros do, and we are nothing but professional here on the Big Pod Machine.
We're nothing something. Yeah. So Pat, I don't know if you saw over the weekend. Well, let's start with this. Let's just start with a couple of news things up front.
Yeah, why don't we do that?
We know the roster started a little short for the Reds. This season with Austin Hayes, Tyler Stevenson, and Andrew Abbott, the big guys opening on the IL, and obviously the closer, who's not so much hurt as he just has lingering delivery issues since a hamstring thing that I'm not sure was quite exactly an injury. But Alexis Diaz is on the IL as well. We do have some news that Andrew Abbott's timeline is firming up now because it looks like he's got on the first and the sixth, he's got rehab assignment starts, and then they're going to look to bring him back in the rotation.
Yeah.
Carson Spires is filling in for him in the meantime. And then Austin Hayes might be on a similar timeline depending on how some of the checkups go over the next week.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. It looks like, Tyler Stevenson's an oblique. And those, you never know with those. So I would imagine he's a little beyond that.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just have to wait it out and see what comes of these different situations.
What do you think they do when Abbott's back?
You know, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think, unless Carson Spires is lighting the world on fire and doing what Brady Singer did in his first start, I think he replaces him. And it makes sense to me maybe that Spires then kicks to the bullpen if he's pitching well as some more depth out there.
Let's go with that.
All right. How much better do you think they can be or will it make much of a difference at all having Hayes back?
I think, well, look. You know, I've been pretty high on Austin Hayes.
That's your guy.
Since camp started. Yeah, my boy. I have been high on Austin Hayes. I just thought, even when he reported early, and I saw him out on a backfield in Goodyear hitting in the cage with Gavin Lux and Will Benson. All those guys were searching for something they didn't have yet. Hayes already had it. At that point,
man, he had a good spring,
and it was mid February. Yeah, he had a really impressive spring.
We should tell people that he's got anybody that knows this, he's got a calf issue.
Yeah,
that cropped up literally the last game of the spring,
and this is now becoming an unfortunate trend for Austin. Injuries have derailed the meat of his career here in the last couple of years. He was an all-star in 22, mm-hmm. and the 2023 season was all but lost to injury in Baltimore. He was not in an everyday role there. He was picked up by the Phillies midseason to kind of round out their roster. That was a team that went on to win 95 games. He was available and started a game in the playoffs, but didn't really make an impact. And yeah, there was a kidney infection there, too. Yeah,
that's right. That was the big thing, right? He didn't even know it for most of that time.
Right, right. But we've seen in just four, as of this recording, Gordon, the Reds have played four games. We've seen
everything.
We really have. So, it's interesting to think about what Hayes could do. I think he ended up hitting .310 in the Cactus League.
I don't know. You're the Cactus League commissioner. Yes. You tell me.
Yeah. Ton of extra base hits. Really solid plate discipline.
He just looked like he was ready.
It's exciting, which is the unfortunate thing. Yeah. So, but, you know, this injury question is going to dog him now. He's got to show what he can do.
Yeah.
And stay healthy, that is.
It's also a domino effect for this club because with him not in left field, that pushes Gavin Lux into left field. They also started Steer on the active roster instead of giving him some more time to get that shoulder right so that when he comes back, he could play in the field. Instead, when he's played, it's been at DH. So that removes that from the equation, too, when you're talking about where Jamer Candelario fits in compared to Gavin Lux, compared to Christian Encarnacion Strand in the first base, third base mix. So if Hayes is back in left field, now Gavin Lux gets his bona fide shot at third base, and then maybe Jamer's your DH more often, which I'm sure some fans would appreciate. But then that depends on, again, what you're doing with Steer. Yeah. So there's a lot of moving parts to this, and that left field, third base, first base going into camp, it looked like that could be a bunch of moving parts, and then Hayes solidified the one spot, and then that's where it looked like maybe just the infield corners.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I did. We got two big issues out of the chute, right? And one is a closer situation, controversy, whatever you want to call it.
Immediately.
A closer absence.
Yeah.
Like they don't have one. But the other one is we got to talk about Torpedo bats, man. There's not a bigger story in baseball.
I think it might be the biggest story in North American sports right now.
Well, and you should know coming over from FC Cincinnati and doing a lot of work on the Bengals so you know all about all the sports.
Okay, I was thinking more in terms of some of the secondary big four sports like NHL, NBA. But yes, I think it.
I don't know, Michigan State getting beat in the Elite Eight, that was pretty big too, right?
Anyway, what I think about the torpedo bat situation, first of all, is this a controversy? Is this good for the game or none of the above? All of the above?
Well, yeah, here's what I think. By the way, these torpedo bats, go look it up. We wrote a couple of stories on it early in the week, and there was a bunch of stories out of New York when the Yankees opened the season with 20 home runs against the Brewers in a three-game series.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, these new bats were supposedly a big reason why what happens is they weight the barrel disproportionately toward the label. So it looks like there's almost a little bubble, and then the barrel of the bat tapers, toward the end. You're supposed to get fitted for these bats. Like they analyze your swing and where you tend to hit the ball most often. And then that's where they try to make the barrel the fattest so that when you do hit it where you usually hit it, the ball goes farther. Now, the thing is, what if you don't hit it there? Now, does the ball go even less far than it did before? There's some evidence to suggest that. And I think it's all in these guys' heads. And I think we'll...
Really?
Now I could be dead wrong on this because I know that there's people that say there's science behind this and sure, but you still have to square it up.
An MIT physicist.
What the hell does an MIT physicist know about baseball?
Enough. He was employed by the Yankees.
I'm just saying that you still have to square it up. You still have to hit it. And, you know, Francona and Bruce Bochy, the two managers in Monday's game, had, you know, related comments, if not the same. Yeah. You know, Francona said, you know, go back and look at some of those pitches that the Brewers were throwing. Yeah. And that might have had something to do with it, too. And when Ellie De La Cruz came out and decided for the first time ever to use a torpedo bat and had four hits, including two home runs.
Yeah, 854 feet worth of home runs last night.
Yeah, yeah. But even Francona said then, I think it has more to do with the player than the bat.
Yeah.
And Bochy thought that, you know, Bochy's comment was, everybody's going to try it now because all the stuff that came out of New York and all the success they had early with it. So everybody's going to try it and we'll see. But you still have to square it up. And he suggested something that you asked some guys about. Will pitchers adjust to this and try to pitch away from the smaller sweet spot, essentially?
If you can imagine the bat handle kind of up into the barrel, if you're shifting the weight and the meat of the label area of the bat down toward where you're gripping it with your hands, it's kind of easy to imagine in your head. Pitchers would probably just throw outside
and
away from the meat of the bat. I think the sample size is so small. People don't really know.
Right.
I've seen a video. Any significant player on, and most teams is being prompted on the subject right now.
Yep.
And I think
it was the first question to Bochy pregame on Monday.
Yeah. It was the third to Francona, and I think someone mentioned they were surprised it wasn't the first. Everyone's being prompted on this. At the end of the day, you hear so many differing opinions about the pros and the cons, and is this a controversy? Is this bad for the game? Is MLB going to catch up to this and crack down on it? You know, I just think it's a little too early.
I agree.
Because it's, while they have been around for more than a year, including in the hands of Jose Trevino, who adopted one of these things in spring training last year.
Who I believe had at least one and maybe both of his singles on Monday night with that bat, not hitting it on that fat part.
Yeah. We're going to have to wait and see what happens, I think, is the simple answer to all these questions.
And I think it's important to note, too, that, you know, all that talk out of New York that the Yankees had this, the Yankees did it, that it was, you know, their initiative, their science, and they're pioneering it, and they hit 20 home runs in the first series. Aaron Judge wants no part of this. The premier home run hitter in baseball, arguably, wants no part of this and hit four of the 20 home runs with his old bat. And there's guys, we talked to guys with the Reds that a few of them feel the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'll also say, I wanted to hear a pitcher's perspective on this. So I went to Emilio Pagan, really interesting stuff. He thinks that, kind of like sticky stuff with pitchers a few years ago, this is an innovation that might get cracked down on eventually, but it feels like the hitters have been playing catch up to the, you know, pitchers have pitching labs now. Were you talking about this yesterday? You know,
I don't know that you and I were talking about it yesterday, but we've talked about this.
Yeah. I mean,
but hitters have increasing technology now too.
But I think this is part of that. And I think we're going to see more things like this coming down the road. And it is very much a pitcher's game right now, isn't it?
It is.
So if the batters can even the playing field, I think that's a win for the game and a win for the fans.
Somebody made a point to me Monday night when we were talking about this in the wake of what Ellie De La Cruz did and all the buzz created out of the weekend, that baseball will certainly look at this for this reason. Like, we've seen in the rules changes in recent years that are trying to pick up the pace of the game, pick up the offense of the game. What they don't want, what they're not looking for, is more home runs. And because that was part of the issue in the action of the game before. They want guys on base. They want action, things in play. So if this creates something, again, that gets us back to you know, if not, you know, for a long time we had the three true outcomes, right? Strikeout, walk, and home runs. Yeah. And but if this gets us back toward where a lot of the hitting action is disproportionately home runs again, they're going to want to look at it just for the quality factor.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
And so that'll be interesting. Right now, I mean, this is perfectly legal. All the dimensions, you know, the Yankees.
These guys are not breaking the rules.
Yeah, and the dimensions are in the rule book, and they're abiding by the dimensions on the bat barrel. But that's where this would get addressed, right? If they determine that it's some kind of against the spirit of the rule advantage or something like that, and they would just make a more uniform barrel required.
Yeah.
But we're a long way from that now. Right now, we're in the middle of chaos with
Pandora's
this.
Pandora's box is open.
And it's fascinating.
It's really cool.
It is one of the coolest stories to follow right now, you know, at a time when some of the competitive landscape is being formed. And now we've got this terrific storyline underscoring it all, that something to watch with every team. I mean, it was funny talking to Chris Valleca yesterday, the Reds hitting coach, who said, a lot of our guys have had these bats for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been using them and trying them out. You and I talked to Jake Fraley, who said he's waiting on his analytics results to see what his bat's going to look like and whether he wants to try to use it.
It's fascinating. It is truly fascinating. And, you know, if MLB cracks down on some aspect of this, just wait a little while and the tech is going to find a way to maneuver around and try to make this work for the hitters. Yeah. I don't think this is going to go away. I don't think this is going to go away. Even if we go back to your opening comment about this, that it's in the hitters' heads.
Confidence. Sometimes,
yeah, that plays. That plays. This is not going anywhere. I don't think this might be.
Go watch Bull Durham.
Yeah. Ooh, sore subject, because I haven't.
Dude, how many times did we talk about this? You got to go see that movie. It's the greatest movie in American cinematic history.
Oh, God.
What do you mean, oh, God? You haven't seen it, so how would you even know to disparage that
I've
comment?
Seen enough from other genres to know that.
You don't know crap if you haven't seen Bull Durham. That's all I got to say. Hey, by the way, if in our business, what would be the equivalent of a torpedo bat?
Wow, what a great question.
I don't know the answer.
I mean, probably the reason some of the players are so cagey about
this. High-speed Wi-Fi.
Maybe. I was going to say something artificial intelligence related, but that's just out and out cheating.
Yeah, that would be like cheating, not batting.
Right. But it's such an enhancement.
Yeah.
Potentially. We don't know. Well, we just said we don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Just a thought. Hey, what are you?
A fast typing course?
If you're Terry Francona, what are you doing for a closer next time you have a ninth inning lead?
I'm going to pick a name out of a hat.
I think that's what he's doing right now.
It seems that way. Through four games, they've kind of only had to really worry about it twice, right?
Twice. And that's because they let a one-run game get away from him in the eighth, in the third game. I mean, they might have still been trailing in the ninth. But.
Yeah, yeah. And then as of this recording, the last game we saw was the 14-3 beatdown of Texas, closing, you know, Sam Maul and Brent Suter giving up one run each in the eighth and ninth inning. There was margin for error.
Yeah, how about this one? I got a stat for you.
Yeah.
Right? You know, coming off of that Giants series to open the season, a lot of consternation, rightfully so, over what are you going to do for a closer? You got nobody that can close a game. Ian Jabot blew the save on Thursday. Emilio Pagan came in and got the save on Saturday, and then there wasn't a save chance on Sunday, but you didn't know who you were going to use. At the end of Sunday, going into the week, how many guys in that bullpen do you think had a zero ERA? And every one of them pitched. It's only three games in. So in most cases, it's just one appearance. In some cases, two.
None.
All but Ian Jabeau. There were a couple of runs allowed late in one of the games, but they were unearned. Every bullpen guy came out of that first series with a perfect ERA, and I guess what I'm saying is there's such a spotlight on that that you forget, you know, that they actually pitched well. Yeah. Most of them pitched well most of the time.
Yeah.
But that ninth inning, man, that's a different animal, and it will. If it continues to bite him in the ass, it can do a lot of negative things to your season.
Yeah, I think it's a momentum killer. It could suck the lifeblood out of not just what should be an entertaining team, but possibly a winning and contending team.
No doubt. And they don't have a lot of margin to work with.
We've talked
about this ad nauseum.
These games like the 14-3 win over Texas are obviously going to be few and far between. But, you know, this team is not built to blow teams out of the water.
No, and one of the things they did well until Sunday was they caught and threw the ball well in the field.
Yeah.
And they didn't do that very well last year. They're going to have to do that. And they don't have a lot of guys out there capable of winning gold gloves. They've got maybe two, maybe three if you want to stretch it. And by two, I mean the guy that's done it in their backup catcher, Jose Trevino, who's their starting catcher now, and their second baseman, Matt McClain, who I think's a bona fide contender for a gold glove at second.
Yeah.
Friedel's good in center. I don't know that he's a gold glove guy. Ellie can make spectacular plays, but he makes enough mistakes until he proves otherwise that that's not gold glove. And that's a very tough position to win a gold glove at. Definitely don't have it in the corners. So they're going to have to pitch. They've got some guys that can take the ball out of play, strikeout guys like Hunter Green. So I think what it all boils down to is just how little margin they have to work with. They've got an average lineup. Maybe not quite average, even when it's fully healthy, it remains to be seen. But they have to win at the margins. They can't lose at the margins. We saw that last year. So
I thought it was interesting too. Emilio, when I spoke to him in the clubhouse, he was very quick to concede that he got away with some mistakes in his save.
Yeah.
So
he's got a closer's mentality, maybe, but not
because
he
can overcome a lot. That can overcompensate.
But he doesn't really have closer stuff, and he's the first to admit that.
Yeah,
Tony Santian might. I think the guy to watch is Graham Ashcraft over time.
And you've been on that for a while.
He wants it. He's got the stuff. I've talked to scouts whose teams have tried to trade for him, in thinking he would be a leverage reliever for them. And this is not a new thought. This is because of, his fastball slider mix and his velocity. This was something that was thought about even by the Reds early in his career. And then he was given an opportunity to start and did well enough that he ran with that for a while. But he could be the answer by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Hey, we're getting close to time on this thing, but before we go, people should get a chance to get to know you, Pat. And there's a terrific baseball story. You have one of the best baseball stories I've heard that involves.
Is that true?
Do you really mean that?
Because you really have heard.
Well, publicly,
we like to prod each other.
There's some stuff we can't really repeat on the air, for something we can't. Your story's great. I mean, it's got a crusty old manager. It's got flatulence. It's got pranks. I mean, it's got everything that baseball is about behind the scenes,
and some charm too. The charm of the game and what makes it great.
Would you share this story, please?
Sure. I don't know the exact year. And we actually worked out that Mark Stowe.
Yeah.
Reds clubby Mark Stowe.
Veteran clubhouse guy.
Yeah.
For the Reds. He and his brother Rick have been around forever. Bernie, the famous one, their dad, brought him up in the business.
So I was down in Sarasota for spring training, and I couldn't have been more than 10 or 11 years old.
And you're like, what, 21, 22 now?
Mark pops his head out of the visiting team's dugout at old, old Ed Smith Stadium in Sarasota. And he looks me up and down. And
who are you there with?
Family. Yeah. And he says, he had done this for my brother before, too. He says, you want to be Bat Boy? And I was terrified. But I knew I couldn't pass on this chance or I would regret it for every day for the rest of my life.
Bat Boy in a big league spring training game.
So I gave
And who was
up.
Playing?
The Pirates were at the Reds at Ed Smith Stadium in Sarasota. And the Pirates, I guess, just didn't bring a Bat Boy with them. And you know, Mark told us that this was something he did routinely for visiting teams. So I came down from the crowd. I handed my, you know, I was down there to get balls signed and I had my glove and all the stuff, handed it off to my dad. And then Mark took me out to the Reds complex, their building beyond right field. And I was out there and everyone could tell I was so freaking nervous. Everyone's just trying to tell me to relax, have fun, relax, have
so
fun.
So are these players, players are telling you
oh,
this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One guy said, hey, guy, we're human just like you. And I said, no, you're not. So they throw a Reds jacket on me and a Reds batting cap, I'd call it, like catchers wear. And I went out to the Pirates dugout and waited for things to get going. It was about a half hour before game time. I'm sitting on kind of the top stoop of the bench in the Pirates dugout near the bat rack. And I'm cold. I'm nervous. I'm terrified. And who but Jason Kendall walks down the length of the dugout, drops all his stuff right at my feet, and kind of bows over to get eye level to me and says, hey, I'm Jason. Can I sign your ball for you? Really, that's the heartwarming
part
of this story. Really cool guy. And then he sorted his equipment out in the bat rack and helmet rack, and he went on his way. From there on out, it was pretty miserable because there are some age-old pranks in baseball, and I fell victim to a few of them. I think the first thing that happened was a player told me to go find the keys to the batter's box, and I was on to him early, immediately as soon as he said it. I thought a little bit. It didn't sound right to me. And I thought this was some kind of a veiled, sarcastic message that, well, then he said, go ask the umpires for the key to the batter's box. And I said, oh, okay. This is a dig at the umpires. They just want me to be the bearer of it to them and to pass on this message and maybe create a little friction or a little levity before the game. I don't know. But then
10-year-old Pat Brennan's putting all this together.
I did. I really did.
Nah, I think you got fooled.
No way. Well, I did get fooled because then I went to the umpires. The lineup card exchange was going on and I interrupted this. I interrupted the entire proceeding and asked the umpires. Cowboy Joe West was umpiring this game.
Oh, I love that guy. Huh.
I don't know if he loved me.
He's got stories.
Yeah. I asked for the key to the batter's box, and I was smiling because, again, I wasn't totally bought in on there actually being a key to the batter's box. But then these guys started feeling their breast pockets. They started feeling their pant pockets. And they said, oh, sorry, kid. I don't know. So they sent me out to the bullpen. I go out to the bullpen. The bullpen coach says, well, hang on. Let's wait for the national anthem. So the national anthem plays. And then he says, nope, don't have it. I'm walking back down the dugout. Fans are haranguing me because I'm on the field. They think I have access to balls. They all want a ball from me. Someone booed me at one point because I said I couldn't give them balls. So this is really going downhill fast. I finally get back to the dugout, and I told a few guys I couldn't find the key to the batter's box. I was certain that I had flubbed it at that point. I was humiliated. I thought I've ruined the game. The other possibility I thought was that this was like the keys to a batting cage underneath the grandstand or something. Obviously, you could probably provide some context here.
So did they wind up telling you it was a gag at some point?
Oh, no. They just let me think I had failed. They left me to think it had failed. Yeah. So,
my favorite part of the story, I think, is what's coming
up. Yeah. So, look, I'm sulking, and no one was going to be able to console me, but I'm sulking on the end of the bench near the bat rack. It was the top of the I think we're in the first inning. I had already forgotten to bring one of the bat boys' chores that people may not know about. You're supposed to bring the pine tar, the batting weights, the donuts. Bring that in off the field, off the warning track, in case the opposing catcher has to make a play there, you know, so they don't trip and kill themselves over them. Lloyd McClendon was not present for the first half inning of baseball.
This is the manager of the Pirates.
Yeah, this is the manager of the Pirates. And he emerges, and this is a bear of a man to someone my age and my size. And at that, even at that early stage in the game, he seemed very upset. He looked at me. I mean, this guy was just, he was combusting in every possible way. There were seeds flying out of his mouth. He was spewing seeds.
What was he mad about?
Spent seeds.
He was angry about something?
He was angry, yeah. Big time.
Umpires?
Umpires.
Okay.
Calls being made in the game. A grapefruit league game, mind you. And
yikes.
He's spewing. He comes up to, he stands right in front of me. And he bends over, his butt is in my face. He then proceeds to spew spent sunflower seed shells everywhere. He throws a cup full of chaw liquid at my feet.
Liquid.
And then unleashes the biggest, loudest fart I had ever heard in my life, right in my face. And about 30 seconds later, he was in Joe West's face and he got tossed. And it was like,
welcome to the big leagues, Pat Brennan.
It was like the end of the first inning. And I was like, what the hell have I just experienced? I was terrified. I wanted to cry. I wanted to go back up into the grandstand and sit with my parents. It was a devastating experience in some ways, but also now this has aged well into a pretty cool story.
That's outstanding.
Yeah. Baseball guys like you appreciate
it. You were meant to do this job. I think that's what the moral of that story is, that this was your destiny.
Here I am.
Lloyd McClendon initiated you into big league baseball, and here you are. Well, we got a long season ahead of us. We got hopefully not too much more flatulence ahead of us, but
we'll see.
But we've got plenty to talk about with these Reds this year. Terry Francona's team, Terry Francona's style, Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain, Hunter Green. I mean, there's a lot, and they haven't even played the Cubs yet. So we'll
your team.
My team, my ass. So, hey, Pat, great first episode, episode one.
Cheers to episode one, Gordon, to many. Long may this continue.
Thanks to Phil, the producer. As you can tell, flawless sound and video.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will be back next week with episode two of season 2025 with, my God, how can we top torpedo bats and Lloyd McClendon's fart? Well, we'll try. We'll have
the ladder,
something.
The ladder
I guarantee
be,
you.
The ladder shouldn't be too hard to compensate for.
All right.
Torpedo bats.
Until next time, the Big Pod Machine out.